From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 29th of May, 2025. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. Gary Schnitke will be here to talk a little bit about what's in the big, beautiful bill that impacts agriculture, in this case, crop insurance and premiums. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll talk about the weather, too. We'll do that with Mike Tenora at T-Storm Weather. That's T-Storm.com. .net online during this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world online, on demand, anytime you'd like to listen at willag.org or in your favorite podcast applications.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn for the day settled at $4.47, four lower. December at $4.41 and a quarter, down 2 and a quarter. Oh, and the September at $4.27 and a quarter, 2 and a half lower for the corn. July soybeans, $10.51 and three quarters, up 3 and a quarter cents. August, 3 and a quarter higher. And November at $10.37 and a quarter, down 0.25 cents. Bean meal futures up $2.70. Bean oil, 54 cents lower. And wheat futures, soft red, up 3 and three quarters. Settlement price there in the July contract at $5.34, the hard red July at $5.31 and three quarters, up 6 and a half cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago up $1.90 at $2.10, 7 and a half. Feeder cattle at $2.99, 92 and a half, up $4.30. And the lean hogs at $102.97 and a half per 100 pounds, down 32 and a half cents for the day. Crude oil on the afternoon at $60.92 a barrel, down 92 cents. Diesel fuel or heating oil at $2.03 and 6 cents a cent, 3 and 4 tenths of a cent lower. And the wholesale price of gasoline for the day finished the nearby contract at $2.03 and 7 tenths of a cent, 2 and a half cents higher. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net now joins us to take a look at the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks for being with us again.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
First off, did you get everything planted?
Yeah. A couple days ago, we finally finished up. You know, we had that rain a week ago, Sunday, Monday. You know, inch to an inch and a half down here. We could have gone earlier if we just could have got some heat, but you know, it was so cold that we just couldn't get things to dry out very well. And so I had to wait around a little bit. Finally, we're able to work some ground there on, actually on Monday there on Memorial Day, and finished working on Tuesday, let it air a little bit, and we're able to get it all wrapped up. So finally got done, at least for now. I don't think we're going to have any replant, but there's a couple fields that were planted there 10 days ago that right before that rain that we're struggling a little bit. Fortunately, we had 2 tenths of rain yesterday, and I do think that that softened things up a little bit, and I think we'll be okay.
Many people in your area still trying to finish up their planting season?
Yeah, especially here in South. You know, so there's a few people right in here for sure. You know, it's just a hit and miss on where you got the rain and where you didn't. You get south of us, and a lot of those guys had a pretty good little run. But unfortunately, you know, they've been even wetter yet than what we've been. So, you know, there's still a lot to get put in the field south of us. Be very interesting to see how this weather is moving forward. It looks like maybe we'll have a shot at some drier weather here for a little bit. One nice thing, of course, Todd, is we got some heat. So that's certainly going to help things get up and going, you know, give a little push to some of those crops that trying to get out of the ground too.
Of course, Mattoon is, 35, 40 minutes to the south of Champaign, directly on the interstate, headed through Effingham and then on to either Memphis or Nashville, depending on which direction you're going, just to give an idea where you are. What are you thinking about the marketplace this week? And then looking forward to USDA's monthly numbers that come out in June as well, if you have thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, the first question, what do I think about the market this week? I don't know if I want to say what I really think, because you'd have to edit it out. But golly, Todd, it's just been a rough week. You know, I mean, there's not much going on. You know, today 2 to 4 lower on corn, beans a shade higher to a shade lower. Wheat, of all things, actually was higher today. So, you've got a little bit of excitement there, if you will. I would call it excitement because wheat just hasn't been able to find any sort of positive momentum whatsoever here for quite some time. But, when you look at this corn market, bear spreading again today. You had July down 4, Dease was down 2.25. And so it's very interesting to see the funds just continue to pile onto their long shorts, most likely well over 100,000 contracts short at this point. And that's in the face of the second part of your question, this June report. So, you look at what exports have been, you look at what ethanol demand again today was strong. It was up on the week. Stocks were lower. So good ethanol report. You've got to assume when you looked at inspections this week, for instance, we're about 29% ahead of last year's pace, whereas the USDA is projecting just over 10% ahead of last year's pace. And so, there's no question that looking at the June report, very high probability USDA raises exports once again. And so my assumption here is that you're going to see a carryout 135 or below. Then with that the case, I think that it highlights the need to have a big yield. Now, other thing is, Todd, what are acres going to be? That's the number one question I continue to get asked. And clearly, south of us, over into Ohio, there could be a few acres you lose. But Todd, I'd be very cautious to assume we lose acres overall, because I think that the rapid pace in the northern half of Illinois, through Iowa, through Nebraska and the Dakotas, leads me to believe that maybe there was a little more corn planted in those parts of the world. And I know people don't want to hear this, but I'm afraid maybe that acreage number creeps higher in June.
So USDA, NASS will be contacting producers, getting an idea what they actually planted, starting next week, maybe already started, and those numbers will show up at the end of June in the acreage report. We'll look forward to that. One of the items that sticks in my mind for the day was the two U.S. courts, not just one, but two, have said that the Trump administration's tariffs imposed on the second day of April, that would be the 10%, along with the reciprocals, which are paused mostly, were not legal under the Emergency Act that he was using from 1977. It would also include the Mexico, Canada, and China tariffs that were imposed before that. The trade took that in stride, didn't seem to really care very much. And does it make much difference to you?
Yeah, I mean, some of these guys like Goldman Sachs came out today and said ultimately they don't think it's going to impact anything. It's more of a roadblock. They feel like he will accomplish his task one way or the other to try to cure some of these trade imbalances. I think that it's problematic for the corn and bean markets, though, if any of our trade partners say, you know what, we're not going to try to equal out these trade imbalances, because one of the big ways they can do that, of course, is buying our agricultural products, which, readily accessible. We've been very competitive. We're starting to lose our competitive edge in corn. Brazil is starting to pick up a little bit of that business, but there's no doubt, Todd, that if they put a roadblock in front of him here, love him or hate him, it's not necessarily a good thing, for our commodities, because a lot of people viewed this as an opportunity to get some of those trade imbalances cured. So I think moving forward, we're just gonna have to see how this thing plays out, but by all means, you would expect they're going to try to find any way they can to try to fix some of these trade imbalances moving forward, which wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing for us as U.S. growers.
Hey, thank you much. And we'll talk with you again next week.
Absolutely, Todd. Thank you.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. We're now joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, a member of the Farm Doc team. He, Nick Paulson, Jonathan Kopis, and Carl Zuloff have penned an article for the Farm Doc website. This one is titled "Impacts a Premium Support Increase of Basic and Optional Units in the House Reconciliation Bill." Short version is, this is an update of some of the farm bill functions, particularly as it's related to crop insurance in the big beautiful bill. So let's go through first what basic and optional units are as compared to what farmers in Corn Belt states generally use.
Yeah, so when farmers buy, you know, their RP or other farm level products, and in Illinois, it's primarily farm RP, they have to make a unit choice, and there's four of them actually: basic, optional, enterprise, and whole farm units. Most farmers in Illinois pick enterprise units, which is all of one crop in a county, so they would have one insurance policy for corn and one for soybeans per county. Basic and optional are divide acres up basic by ownership split, so all cash rent and each share rent landowner would have its own unit, and optional units divide those out further by township section. So those are optional, basic, and enterprise are the three big choices that are made for most insurance plans.
And the changes that Congress is considering are about what?
So the House Reconciliation Bill increased premium support or premium subsidies for basic and optional units, and it's roughly a 4% increase. So what that would do would be to increase the federal portion of the total premium and reduce the farmer paid premium for basic and optional units here. The key here is that Midwest farmers tend to take enterprise units, and there weren't any changes to enterprise unit subsidy levels, so it would be basic and optional units that would get that increase, and not enterprise units.
How much in the way of cash rent and share rent, or the landowner side, is on basic?
So that depends, but a share rent landowner, if they're eligible for enterprise units, would probably be in enterprise units. We don't know that breakdown, or that isn't provided by RMA of which is what. So
So essentially, I would say if they own one farm, they're probably on basic, but if they own more than one farm, they're on an enterprise unit.
that would probably be true.
Yep. Just trying to get an idea for the landowners what the difference might be. So now let's dive into this just a little bit. It is a 4% extra subsidy. What does that mean as it relates to how insurance rates might change?
So 4 to 5%. So if you're looking in Illinois, you're probably looking at something in the $40 total premium range. For many farmers, it would be $1, $1.50 decrease in premiums if they have basic and optional units. And again, if you have enterprise units, you wouldn't be getting that. We calculated what it would be on average for all counties in the nation, and in Illinois and all of the Midwest, the impact of this would be less than $1 per acre. So, and that is partly due to Illinois being a low risk state and using more enterprise units than basic and optional units.
Are there regions of the country that use more basic and optional units?
And some of the areas would be California and the West Coast, and that's primarily due to there being specialty crop production out there, and they tend to use basic and optional units. The middle part of the state, nation, excuse me, the Western Great Plains, like Western Nebraska, Western Kansas, the Panhandle of Texas, and Colorado tend to use more basic and optional units than do the rest of the country. And so does the Southeast. Georgia, Florida, South Carolina tend to use more basic and optional units. And again, they would be a lot of that would be related to peanuts as well. So there are regions that use more of it. They tend to be either higher value crops, such as California, and higher risk crops, such as the Great Plains and Southeast.
Any commentary on what value this might have as it's related to a general farm policy?
So from a farm policy standpoint, you wonder why Congress chose to do basic and optional units rather than all the units. That would obviously have regional impacts. And why basic and optional units were chosen and not given to enterprise would be a good choice. Good question. Particularly given that enterprise units have some advantages over basic and optional. They tend to have lower premiums because of more diversification. So why are we penalizing those policies? The other re question you could have is, farmers are already insuring 90% plus acres of that are insured. So, what's the problem that we need higher subsidy rates here, and could we use that in some other way? So, why was enterprise units left out, and why are we increasing subsidies? Is a good question. I would also note that any time we're increasing premium, those premium supports, we're putting more dollars in high-risk areas because, 4% of a $40 policy in Illinois is less than 44% of a $100 policy in the Great Plains or Southeast. So as we've increased these premium supports, we're getting some areas into the income support range with these crop insurance policies. And why are we doing that for making those on the basis of providing more support for high-risk areas versus lower-risk areas?
Within the budget, how much budget increase is this over a 10-year period?
So this would be roughly $2 billion over a 10-year period. That's a relatively small part of the some. 4% increase, but nevertheless, it's $2 billion over 10 years.
That is not accounting for possible changes in those outlying areas where it may make a difference.
Yeah, and you would reasonably expect increase in subsidy to increase coverage levels and a movement towards more basic and optional units, which would thereby increase those costs.
Thank you much, Gary.
You're welcome.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. You may read the article online at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our theme music is written, performed, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Let's turn our attention to the growing regions across the planet. We'll stay here in the United States. Mike Tenor is with us. He's the president and CEO at T-Storm Weather. Hello, Mike. Thanks for being with us on a Thursday again.
Thanks a lot, Todd. Always great being here.
Well, let's talk about the weather in the midsection of the country, the growing regions of the Corn Belt and other places. What do you see for the next 5 to 10 days?
Well, we've been in this cool pattern for the last 10 days, and that's going to end over the next 5 days. So once we get into early next week, everybody will be nice and mild with temperatures in the 70s and 80s during the daytime. That is going to last for a while because we don't see any major cool spells beyond the next 5 to 10 days. So we think the temperatures will be a lot warmer going forward. With that, though, comes rain. There's a big system that'll move across the central U.S. next week, and that should bring 3/4 of an inch to 1 3/4 of an inch of rain to pretty much all corn, soybeans, spring wheat, and even winter wheat. So a pretty large system is going to pass next week. Beyond then, the pattern doesn't look all that different than the one that's coming up. And so we think that storminess is pretty much going to linger across the heart of the central U.S. over the next 10 days and maybe even over the first half of June.
Now let's divide it into sections of the Corn Belt, relatively speaking. But I want to start with the spring wheat areas to begin with in the northwestern part of the Midwest. That would be Minnesota and North Dakota. What do you see for them?
Well, the rain that's coming up next week is probably not ideal. About half of that crop had more than twice its normal rainfall over the last 2 weeks, and it's too wet. And that's very likely what's driving the low condition ratings that we've seen for that crop. So even though it will be warmer, and that will certainly help with the growth of that crop, it's also going to turn it wetter, and it's already wet. So we think that the argument can be made that the rain next week and beyond then is not what we want to see for spring wheat. We need some drier weather over the next couple of weeks, but that just doesn't seem to be what's about to happen. So their crop is wet and is going to stay wet.
In the primary Corn Belt growing regions from the Dakotas to Ohio, are there differences as it relates to what the weather looks like over that same time frame?
Well, it's going to be the same weather with this pretty widespread event next week and probably beyond then too. So, you know, they're also going to tap into a lot of rain in this key area of the Corn Belt, but conditions have not been all that wet in recent weeks. And actually, it's been drier than normal over the last 30 days across a pretty big section of Iowa through northern Illinois and into northern Indiana. So the rain coming up is going to keep soil moisture in check, and it'll prevent the dryness story from becoming notable. And so overall, for the heart of corn and soybeans, the upcoming rains next week are probably going to be a good thing, especially when you combine them with some of the mild weather that's coming up.
And in the Mid-South and Delta region, what do you see?
Well, they're saturated. They've had a lot of rain over the last 1 to 2 months, even earlier this week. And they're going to see a little more rain today. And then they get hit by this rain event later next week. And that's going to keep soil saturated in this area. So you could argue that there's too much rain coming up for the Mid-South. And when we talk about those states, we primarily mean the corn, soybean, and wheat areas of Arkansas, Kentucky, Tennessee, and then south into Mississippi. So this region is going to probably see a little bit too much rain, kind of like what we're seeing across the Dakotas. So Todd, a real challenging situation. And the one thing we didn't even mention is that we're still trying to finish up with corn, soybean, and spring wheat planting. So, you know, in the one regard, the dryness that's in the Corn Belt is going to help accelerate that process. But on the other hand, everything's going to come to a pretty rapid close next week as we get into another significant rain. So, you know, this has been a challenging story to kind of compartmentalize for everyone. But all in all, you know, just kind of a mixed bag with really varied conditions across the central U.S.
And if you were to summarize that first 10 days of June, is there an easy way to do it?
Well, normal to mild and stormy. It doesn't look like it's going to be dry, and it looks like it's going to be pretty nice as far as temperatures go, with highs in the 70s and 80s most days. So pretty stormy open to June, just with some mild temperatures.
Hey, thank you much, Mike.
Yeah, great being here, Todd.
Mike Tenure is the president and CEO of T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. Joined us for this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. You may find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org, whereby about 6 o'clock this evening, we'll post our weekly Commodity Week program. That's a broader look at the marketplace. Our panelists this week will include Chip Nillinger and Shane Holtorp. You'll want to listen to that up at 6 tonight and on many of these radio stations tomorrow or over the weekend. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.